Good evening and a very warm welcome to all. Welcome to the Peace Alliance National Field Call for the month of June. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and we're very happy to have you all with us. I'm going to go over the agenda for this evening, and then we're going to go right into what we have to offer tonight. In about a minute, I'm going to introduce Marla Mossman, who's our Council Lead for Fostering International Peace Building, and then Marla is going to introduce our special guest, Srimal Fernando. After Srimal speaks, we'll have a chance for question and answer and discussion, as usual. And after that, we'll hear a report from Kendra Mann of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee, and then we're going to look at our monthly action for June. Everyone on this call should have received an action sheet about a half an hour ago in your email. So if you have a chance to get to your email before we get to about 9:30 on the East Coast, 6:30 on the West Coast, and please do the math for me in other time zones, please access that action sheet so we can look at it together in about 40 minutes, and we'll have some training on that action. And then we want to hear shares from anybody around the country who has something to share about what's happening in your peace-building world. I know there were quite a few of us who are Peace Alliance affiliated or connected who are at the National Association for Community and Restorative Justice Conference in Oakland a few days ago. Anyone who was there, I would love to hear any updates from your sense of highlights from that conference. Anybody else who just has something you want to share about your peace-building life, aspirations or achievements or projects, we'd love to hear it. That being said, I just want to say once again how excited I am that so many of you are on the call with us. It seems like the Peace Alliance continues to be a really strong touchstone for me. Whatever's happening in the world, whether it's locally or internationally in the news, coming back to a group of people that comes together to promote proactive, practical peace-building tools and policies, that continues to be a touchstone for me for over 10 years now. So I really appreciate you all joining with me in this project. So now I'd like to introduce Marla Mossman. Marla is our council lead. We have a leadership council, and Marla is our council lead for fostering international peace building. She's a filmmaker and a teacher, and she works closely with the United Nations and other organizations to promote international peace building projects and tools. And I'm happy that she's joined us to organize and create this call. And now, without further ado, welcome Marla.
Thank you, Dan. And I just want to thank everybody else who's on this call this evening. And to Srimal in Sri Lanka, it's 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. So good morning to you, and thank you for being on this call very early. So firstly, let me just say that Srimal Fernando comes from an island nation that has been at war for 30 years. And secondly, his exposure not only to the situation in Sri Lanka, he had exposure to similar situation in other South Asian countries. Uprooting the causes of conflict is not an easy task. And certainly, Srimal stands out as a shining example promoting nonviolence, peace, and justice around the region. To promote peace, unofficial third parties work with people from all walks of life and sectors of their society to find ways to build relationships. As a highly skilled analyst, Srimal worked as a regional advisor and as a global editor for quite some time in Asia. In addition, Srimal is a recipient of the 2017 Doctoral Fellowship for International Affairs. He has a solid education foundation with an MA in philosophy and sociology and an MA in public policy. I'm thrilled to introduce Srimal Fernando.
Well, thank you, Marla, and thank you, Dan. Good morning to everybody and good evening. Okay. Distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for having me. I would like to express my sincere appreciation to Peace Alliance, Marla Mossman, and to Dan Kahn for inviting me to participate in this session. Well, reconciliation is a key to national healing of wounds. After ending a violent conflict, healing the wounds of past and readdressing the past wrongs is a process through which a society moves from a divided past to a shared future. The complex civil war in Sri Lanka, which had prevailed for nearly three decades, came to a close in May 2009. Yet 8 years after the violent conflict ended in Sri Lanka, post-war island nation moved on from the destruction of war to a place of hope and healing. For Sri Lanka, the relations with U.S. are the most important. Over the years, United States supported the island nation in their efforts to secure stability and lasting peace in the post-conflict situation. And also, over the past 55 years, USAID had done a lot more than alleviating poverty in poorer countries, but had been a main driver of economic progress, well-being in many developing nations. It is my pleasure and great honor to address this session of call to action organized by the Peace Alliance. In this context, I will focus on what does US-based international peace building really look like in Sri Lanka and around the world. Let me begin by explaining how the Sri Lanka's northern insurgency movement started, derailing so much of social, economic, and political progress with unimaginable human suffering at the end of a decade-long ethnic conflict. In 1983, Sri Lanka was severely unprepared for a war. A major landmark in the spiral of violence was the landmine blast in Tirunelveli in Jaffna, causing the death of 13 Sri Lankan soldiers. The decisive factor in triggering of the crisis that led the Sri Lankan conflict was the rivalry between the Sinhalese and the Tamils living in the south and in the northern provinces of the country. Sri Lanka was engulfed in a civil war from 1983 to 2009. The Tamil Tigers uprising was one of the most misunderstood political troubles in the island nation for decades. About 100,000 Sri Lankans died as a result of such intense warfare. I was determined more than ever to do what I could do for justice and peace in Sri Lanka. Scholars had offered a variety of explanations about the origin of the Sri Lankan conflict. Even though the war had ended, the main problems on ethnicity still remains. Sri Lankan politicians representing the Sinhalese and the Tamil ethnic communities have not been able to come to one platform to obtain a sustainable solution to the national problem. Traumas in the 30 years of Sri Lanka conflict has become synonymous with dilemmas of humanitarian action. During the question and answer session, I can answer your questions and go more in depth into details on the unfolding situation during the Sri Lankan war. With this background, I want to reflect about my approach to stimulate broad-based community-driven peace-building in my country. My origin is in a small country as Sri Lanka or Ceylon in the heart of South Asia. Being from Sri Lanka helps me to understand the problems we face within our country and the region and other issues relating to the global competition. In this context of Sri Lanka's post-conflict situation, one can find people-to-people-level peace-building activities taking place in a variety of forms. People-to-people peace-building efforts have always been a crucial, though insufficient, stepping stone on the way to post-conflict peace-building in Sri Lanka. Secondly, working with agents, non-governmental organizations, media, dialogues between professionals of influence in people-to-people activities is another way of reaching the wider public and impacting the political mindset. Whilst we do not have direct control over the actions of our leaders, we can and we must make a difference between our societies. Sometimes actions of one or two people can have an impact on so many people. You may raise questions about my response to how these working experiences helped us to build peace in ethnically divided post-conflict Sri Lanka. Well, U.S. had played a crucial role in supporting peace-building efforts in Sri Lanka. The commendable U.S. efforts have won both hearts and minds of many Sri Lankans through its positive actions in the island nation. The next section of the speech explains the U.S. activity and aid during and after war in Sri Lanka in detail. The U.S. foreign assistance, since its inception, made a substantial contribution to both economic growth, social development, and has been promoting peace democratization to save lives and change lives for better tomorrow. Since 1956, over $2 billion in development assistance to numerous priority areas in Sri Lanka was granted by United States Agency for International Development. When Sri Lanka conflict ended in May 2009, Sri Lankan authorities faced the formidable task of providing food, shelter, and health care to some 280,000 displaced persons, while at the same time facilitating returns was another task that the government had to undertake. The immediate task in post-conflict situation includes upgrading IDP camps to internationally accepted levels by providing food, shelter, clothing, medical requirements, ensuring education of school-going age children. U.S. remained genuinely dedicated to responding to the needs of conflict-affected people in Sri Lanka. In 2009, United States provided a total sum of $89 million to Sri Lanka. Also, a $50 million humanitarian assistance played an important role in stabilizing the situation of internally displaced persons, that's IDPs, during the post-conflict period. In addition, U.S. funds played a role in mine action programs in Sri Lanka to survey and clear landmines, cluster mutation remnants in conflict-affected areas in the north and the eastern provinces. Sri Lanka received one of the largest shares of allocation of $101 million for fiscal year 2010. Over the past decades, the U.S. response to specific emergencies has been praiseworthy, and share of humanitarian aid for critical operations going to Sri Lanka. More IDPs have returned to their homes in the north and the east since 2011. Democratization and peace building are closely interlinked. Political stability has been gradually restored in the former war-shattered areas in the country. United States and other international donors played an important role in laying the groundwork to promote good governance, the rule of law, democracy. U.S. assistance supported democratic institutions including the parliament, the election commission, judiciary, and the media. During 2012 budgetary allocation for Sri Lanka, U.S. committed a total of $63 million to Sri Lanka. There are, however, many success stories in Sri Lanka. One such initiative was the $13 million U.S. aid three-year project titled Strengthening Democratic Governance Accountability Project, launched in partnership with the Parliament of Sri Lanka in November 2016 to improve strategic planning, communication with the government and the Parliament to enhance public outreach. The USAID Office of Transition Initiative Program in Sri Lanka that took a bottom-up approach to peace building by working predominantly with the committee-based civil society groups was another achievement. According to USAID office in Sri Lanka, agency had provided job skills to more than 50,000 vulnerable Sri Lankans affected by conflict and natural disaster. The National Democratic Institute was working to establish dialogue groups to discuss constitutional reforms in Sri Lanka in the south, central, and the eastern provinces. Sri Lanka's bilateral relationship with the U.S. is deeply linked to Sri Lanka's domestic issue of reconciliation. Another landmark in the U.S.-Sri Lanka relationship was the state visit of U.S. State Secretary John Kerry with a U.S. delegation of 35 delegates to Sri Lanka for a two-day official visit from 2 May to 3, 2015. The visit of Kerry alleviated bilateral relations and gave fresh impetus and sought a new direction in paving the way to future strategic relations between U.S. and Sri Lanka. Well, U.S. foreign assistance, since its inception, made a substantial contribution to both economic growth, social development, has been promoting peace, democratization, to save lives and change lives for better tomorrow. A recent study had shown 36 out of 57 nations that successfully made a transition to democratic government during the past 50 years due to organizations' efforts to foster good governance. Over the 55 years, USAID had done a lot more than alleviating poverty. USAID has global footprint with operations in over 120 countries, functioning in some 30 different program areas with an annual budget of around $17 billion. At the same time, an organization report published in 2013 indicates USAID provided a total sum of $9.5 billion in total assistance to 35 low-income countries and to 46 middle-income economies. In May 2014, India was declared polio-free by the World Health Organization. USAID played a particularly important role to support national polio eradicating efforts in India. Over the past 55 years, USAID had done a lot more than alleviating poverty in countries, but had been the main driver of economic progress and well-being in many developing nations. Thank you for giving up so much of your time. Well, I enjoyed talking to you all. You've been a great audience. I'm pleased to answer your questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Shrimal. Yes. That was very, very informative. I'm really looking forward to people answering and asking some questions. Dan, I'm going to hand this over to you.
Okay, terrific.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you have a question for Shrimal, please press 1 on your telephone keypad, and I'll recognize that as your hand going up. You can just press 1 on your keypad, and I'll see that as a hand raised, and you can go ahead with any questions you might have. While people may be sort of scratching your heads thinking about what to ask or getting your nerve up, I can go ahead and ask a question. Shrimal, I appreciate so much of what you shared. I love the detail that you went into. Something that I didn't hear, and I might have missed it, within that assistance from USAID, was any of that channeled toward a kind of a peace-building effort between the factions that had formerly been at war, like any kind of a either truce and reconciliation or some kind of a round table, anything along those lines?
To my knowledge, USAID played a role specifically to strengthen the government institutions as well as the constitution, as also they paved the way for a peaceful negotiation with the conflicting parties. But during the final stages, it was not a final stages of the conflict, it was not possible. But the U.S. as well as aid agencies did whatever they could to restore the lives of conflict affected people. So, and providing food and clearing landmines, helping the IDPs, that was their main role. But towards democratization, they played a great role. Of strengthening.
Got
so
it.
I cannot say that. To answer to your question is a bit.
I get it. Yeah, I imagine
it's varied,
sometimes.
It's varied. Compared. Yeah.
Sure. What I'm hearing is maybe sometimes there are just smaller steps that need to be taken, or I mean significant major steps.
But I could say like this again. Like in year 2003. Secretary, I cannot remember his name, U.S. provided a facilitation role during the peace process brokered by the Norwegians. It was in 2003. So, but they didn't get directly involved, but they did the facilitation role through the Norwegian government. Yeah. So that was in the early stages. Yeah. So in that sense. But it was not U.S. ID. But it was the U.S. government effort in getting the Indians, getting, from third-party contacts.
Okay. Terrific. I still see no hands going up, and I'm guessing that my guess is that a lot of this information might be fairly new to a lot of folks. Oh, I see one hand going up. So I was going to – another hand. Great. My guess was that this might be just a lot for folks to wrap their minds around, but maybe folks are starting to find some angles into this, so I'll recognize the first person I saw was Annalisa. Go ahead, Annalisa, your mic is open.
Thank you so much for sharing your information with us. You shared that one or two people can make a difference. What are some of the specific ways that a non-politician, a non-organization can contribute to peace building in Sri Lanka? Please.
Yes. I couldn't get your name. Anyway, the people, like, for example, I'll give you one example. There's an organization called Coexistence Foundation, where there was an individual called Dr. Kumar Rupasinghe. It did huge programs to foster peace as well as to build coexistence among the three ethnically divided communities, the Sinhalese and Tamils. This was during the war and also after the war. So to change the mindset of the current younger generation and to build good thoughts of peace and how to live with harmony with the other neighbors, that was one example. Part of his project was supported by the United States government, as well as there were many individuals like Parke Soti and Jihan Pereira, who runs National Peace Building Organization. They all with the support of the international community. These were individuals and civil society members who individually tried to do something great. And because of their efforts today, both communities, because some years back it was only the Sinhalese language that we had to use. Now in government institutions you can use Tamil language as well as the Sinhalese language, and it has been enacted as an act in the constitution. So that's one result.
I would piggyback on that a little bit and say that we have prepared an action that anyone can take this evening and this coming week to help advance this work. So stay tuned. In the second half of the call, we'll talk about an action that we would love for you all to take to promote peace building in Sri Lanka and around the world. Thanks for your question. Yeah. Next, I see one of our board chair people, Judy Kimmel. Go ahead, Judy. Your mic is open.
Hi, everyone. I have a question, and that is, it's clear from what you've shared that U.S. aid has been very strategic in helping Sri Lanka kind of end war and heal and nurture. I'm wondering, is the aid continuing now to the degree that it was previously when the war was more recently, the violence was ended? And is there a concern that if our budget priorities change in the United States, which there's a strong possibility that will happen with our new budget, how will that impact Sri Lanka in the future, or how do you see that having an impact?
Okay. Yes. Thank you, ma'am. The point is, like, since 2016, the budget allocation has gone down to Sri Lanka a lot, and the last supporting act was a $13 million support for the Sri Lankan Parliament. This year, U.S. Gave support for disaster management when there was a flood. It was $3.5 million. So it has gone down, but U.S. is continuing to support the good governance and democratization process, as well as sometimes it's not from budgetary allocations, sometimes there's a political support with congressmen visiting Sri Lanka, with visits from here, parliamentary exchanges. So now the country's situation has stabilized. So it's about bringing about the two communities together and coming to a constitution where there is a shared values in such a process. So that's what U.S. is concentrating at this point. That's how I see. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah. Thank you, Judy. We have one more hand raised. No, there's two hands raised, just so you have a sense of how long the line is. And the next one I'm going to call on is Soraya. Go ahead. Oh, wait, Soraya, there, your mic is open.
Yes, yes. Hi, Srimal. I'm a fellow Sri Lankan and an American.
Oh,
so,
great. Nice to hear that.
Yes, I live in Los Angeles. Oh, okay. Yes, and I'm so heartened to hear the amount of support that America has given Sri Lanka. So as a Muslim, I watch what's happening in Sri Lanka very closely. In the last 2 months, I think there were 20 or so shops belonging to Muslims that were vandalized, burnt. And so I feel there is an ethnic, a religious conflict, or is it an ethnic conflict? I don't know. What is it that the Muslims of Sri Lanka can do more? And what is it the majority Buddhists and the others can do more? Because there definitely is a lot of impunity, mm-hmm. and there is a lot mm-hmm. of tension right now in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Raya. I mean, some of your facts may be correct, and some I'm not sure. The point is, I'm currently in Colombo, and there has been tensions between a fraction of the Buddhist monks as well as the Muslim community. But Muslim community and the Sinhalese community has been living for a long time with coexistence. And I mean, we have shared values. And also, as you know, Rafiq Farid is the one who gave the Colombo Museum. And there has been so many things. And even in the Sri Lankan forces, there has been many Muslim boys who have been fighting against the other part. Also, Muslims have been, some years back, they were displaced due to the conflict from North and East. But what I see is the tension might go down because the current government is trying to diffuse this tension. And people are also not in that mindset of 1983 or 1990. People are more educated. There are incidences, but I don't think it will go so far. That is my opinion. But you never know. I mean, today you can never predict anything, or you cannot say that it will not happen. But at this point, government is taking required precautions to prevent such another situation which might have happened many years ago. That's how I see. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so.
But your concerns are greatly taken. These are sensitive things. Yeah.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly, ma'am. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I feel I'm wedged right in between. My mom's a Buddhist and my father's a Muslim. So I see the problem from both sides. And I certainly think the Muslim, I am really concerned that the Muslim community is not highly involved, the women particularly. And if there's something mm-hmm. we can do, and what is it, is something that I wanted to ask you.
Yes. What you can do is always promote peace and coexistence among the two communities, and maybe you can join with the Reconciliation Ministry headed by the former President Chandrika and Minister Manohar Ganeshan. They have a lot of programs. Also, you can contact the Colombo USID office, which runs programs. There are numerous ways of engaging with the civil society and the media and all, which they all are doing a tremendous job. So I think these are avenues that you can check. I mean, these are legitimate avenues where you can get involved and participate and contribute your thoughts for fostering reconciliation in our country. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I love this very empowering conversation. I feel like I'm learning, and I love the idea of Soraya connecting with one or more of those entities and actually being influential in the peace process. I see a hand from Jory, and I'll go ahead. Your mic is open, Jory.
Thank you. This has been very helpful already. And my husband and I have been invited to go to Sri Lanka in July as part of an international intensive training.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So it's part of an international intensive training on nonviolent communication, and I feel pretty somewhat ignorant about the culture of Sri Lanka and how to really be respectful and supportive in being able to make the connections we are going to foster, not only connections to our connection to the people, but also in supporting the connections of the 50 or 60 participants who will be there. So if there's any insights that you can share with us at this point, it would be very helpful.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. I mean, Sri Lanka's population, I think, as you know, is about 20 million, I mean, a little bit over. And 75% of the population is Sinhalese, and mainly they are Buddhist. And rest of the country, the minorities are around 50% Tamils, mainly living in the north and the east. So when you come to Colombo, where the capital is, it's a mixed place, where 30% of the population, 35 to 30% of the population is Muslims, then another 30% is Tamils, and the rest is Sinhalese. So even the Colombo mayor is a Muslim. Yeah, I mean, if you come here, it will be something like London, but it's not so developed. So people don't think in that sense, like who is Tamil, who is Sinhalese. But when it comes to politics or something, or when you go to a religious place, you have to be a bit more respectful by wearing some long dresses. There are certain, like, dressing up modestly. That's all. I mean, other than that, there's nothing much. You'll be pretty welcome, very well, and everybody will be very hospitable to you. And it's a smiling country, and people are loving. That's how I see. So I think you will have a very wonderful time here by traveling, and nothing will happen. It's very safe.
Oh, thank you so much. That really gives me some insight into the culture of the people and will support us in this 9-day training and connecting. Thank you.
I would be more than happy to connect you two by sharing your email addresses with each other if that's something you'd like me to do. I imagine you could have further productive.
Sure. Just write to me or something. I'm there to help you out. So till next month. Yeah, you can contact me.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm in Colombo.
It will be in Colombo, and we do have one.
Yeah, I reside in Colombo.
And so it's nice to have another
just
connection. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm there.
All righty.
Okay, terrific. Well, I think that's about all we have time for question-wise, but this has been a wonderful conversation. Srimal, I'm so glad that you joined us. I really appreciate your time with us. And I'm going to turn it over to Marla for a final thank you and farewell, but we are really glad that you joined us, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Srimal. Thank everyone who was listening and who asked some insightful questions. And you just, Srimal, you just gave us a lot of information and thoughts to deal with and just some really important details to know about what the USAID is doing in your country so we really can understand the work that we're doing and how it impacts in small villages and in places around the world. So thank you so much for all your knowledge and wisdom.
You're most welcome. Yeah. I hope you found my answers helpful. I want to thank you all again for taking time out of from your busy schedules today. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
And you're more than welcome, Srimal. Sure. Srimal, you're more than welcome to stay with us for the next 25 minutes if you'd like. We're going to be going into some other topics, but you're welcome to stay with us and listen in if you would like. But if you have to go for whatever reason, we understand whatever your schedule is, you're welcome to join us or leave as is convenient.
Okay. I will join you later. For a moment, I might. Is it all right if I join you later? Because I can schedule some.
Feel free. Yeah, you're welcome
thanks,
to come
Dan.
And go.
I'll talk to you later. Right. Yeah, thanks.
Sounds good. Be well.
Thanks.
Okay, I think that was Wonderful. And again, this call will be recorded, is being recorded, and the recording should be available within a day or two. Oh, in a little bit, I'm going to mute somebody. I think that's where I'm coming from. Okay. So that call will be recorded, this call is being recorded and will be available in a day or two on our website. So next, I want to go to a report from Tandra Mann on our Department of Peacebuilding Committee. But before I do that, I just want to remind you we're going to be going into training on the monthly action pretty soon. And all of you who were registered for the call before, half hour before the call, should have received an action sheet in your email inbox. So I want to encourage you to go ahead and get that action sheet, have it on your screen or print it out so we can look at it together in about 5 or 10 minutes. But for now, I want to welcome our beloved Kendra Mann from the Department of Peacebuilding Committee to give us an update. Go ahead, Kendra, your mic is open.
Well, hi, everybody, and thank you for being there. We want to tell you a little bit more about that National Association for Community and Restorative Justice Conference that Dan talked about earlier, that we got a lot of sign-ons from at the table there for the Peace Alliance, and lots of signatures in support of the Department of Peacebuilding legislation, H.R. 1111. We continue to work on getting more members of Congress to sign on. The last session of Congress, if you may not realize that the bill has to be reintroduced every 2 years, each session of Congress. So it was reintroduced earlier this year. At the end of the last session, we had 40 co-sponsors, and already we have 31 co-sponsors, and we're working hard on, and we have a number of new co-sponsors. So progress, we feel good about that. We also have new organizations are co-sponsoring the legislation, not co-sponsoring, endorsing the legislation. You can find the list online at the Peace Alliance website. And just one of the new ones was the Lutheran Synod that covers Northern California and Nevada. So that was really neat, and just want to remind you that you can also approach the organizations that you belong to, whether they're small local ones or national ones, and ask them to co-sponsor. The form is also on the website. We're working hard on city resolutions endorsing the bill, and looking forward to lobby days, October 4th and 5th this year in Washington, D.C., and anybody who's done that, it is really exciting to have a chance to actually walk the halls of Congress and speak to legislators and their aides. And lastly, I just want to tell you that we are seeking people that would like to be members of our national committee for the Department of Peacebuilding, and you can send me an email if you're interested, and I can give you more information to consider. My name is Kendra Mann, KendraMon, at comcast.net. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kendra. So, anyone who has questions about the current state of the bill or the committee work, please email Kendra at kendramon@comcast.net. Did I get that right, Kendra?
Yes, and we also have monthly meetings just like this one on the third Monday at 5 p.m. on this same calling number. But anyway, we can give you more information about those as well. Thank you.
Great. So let's move on to this monthly action. For folks who got excited about some of the stuff Sri Mal was talking about, this action is a chance to really promote the most progressive peace-building aspects of USAID and beyond USAID. The bill that we talked about last month that was about to be introduced, in fact, did get introduced on May 17th. It's called the Elie Wiesel Genocide and Atrocities Prevention Act. And I would like you to take a look. I'm going to invite you to take a look at that action sheet if you have the opportunity to do that right now, which was sent about 45 minutes ago. It's very brief, and it's just a chance to promote this bill, which already has 24 co-sponsors in the Senate. That's a lot of co-sponsors for the Senate, where there are only about 100 senators. And I'd love to have someone raise a hand if you're willing to read to us from that action sheet, the first bit of it. Go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you're willing to do some reading aloud so we have one more voice of folks looking at that action sheet. The 1 is probably the one next to the 2. It might be above the 5, now above the 4. Mom, you want to hear my voice just reading this thing? Anyone? Anyone? Okay, I guess I'll read it if nobody else really wants to. But please read along with me. Build international peace. Support 1158, S-1158. The clear message we invite you to send to Congress is promote what works. This bill would, A, authorize interagency coordination for atrocities prevention, B, authorize funding for this purpose, C, authorize training for foreign service officers in atrocities prevention, and D, authorize the intelligence community to focus on atrocities prevention. And when they say atrocities prevention, we'd like to translate that as peace building. They look at areas that are high risk, high consequence, that there's a potential for major problems, the kind of problems that create refugee crises, that create genocides, and they get ahead of the ball by promoting multi-party processes to build understanding, to build cooperation, to build relationships. The next thing I would love is for somebody to volunteer to actually read through the script. There's a script a little bit below where I was reading on the action sheet. And the first step I'm going to ask you to do is to look on congress.gov and search S-1158. It's really simple. You could even just Google S-1158 and put in the word Elie, E-L-I-E, and you would get directly to this bill. Or you can go to congress.gov, and there's a search engine on congress.gov. You can search S-1158 to find out if your senator is already one of those 24 co-sponsors. And if your senator is already a co-sponsor, then our request is that you thank them and encourage them to be more of a champion for this bill. Even if they're already a co-sponsor, we want to ask them to give this bill their full outspoken support, to talk to their caucuses about it, to write op-eds about it, whatever that looks like for them. If they're not yet a co-sponsor, either one of your two senators, we want you to ask them to become one, okay? It's the new bipartisan Senate bill on atrocities prevention, S-1158. So do I have a volunteer who's willing to go through the script more or less? You can improvise a little bit, but we'll do a little role play. I see a hand up, and I don't know if that was an answer to this question. Sherilyn, are you willing to read that script or go more or less role play a conversation? With
sure.
Senate staff who answers the phone.
It took me a while to get going there.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Hi, Gerilyn. Gerilyn Stapleton is our legislative council lead. So it's perfect to be on the phone with you. And it was great seeing you in Oakland at this conference.
Yes, it sure was. It was really great to see everybody.
So for the sample script, right? Yeah, we start with ring, ring. I like to pretend we're actually on the phone.
Hi there. My name is Gerilyn Stapleton. Do you think you could connect me with Senator Harris?
Senator Harris?
Yes.
Sure.
Kamala.
Sure. Kamala Harris. Just a moment, please. The Senator Harris's office, how may I help you?
Hi, my name is Marilyn Stapleton, and I am a constituent from Los Angeles, California. And there's a bill on atrocities prevention, which was just introduced on May 17th in the Senate. And the bill would have, it would take us through, I'm sorry, my glasses are fogging up again. We need to go back up to what it would do, right?
Oh, yeah, you can. There's lots of ways to do it, but sure. You could say what it would. The most simple form is you could just say, S-1158, I want my senator to support it. That's good enough for them to check the box. If you want to describe what it would do to let them know why it's exciting
true.
To you,
okay.
That's great too, sure.
Yeah, my computer got stuck. Sorry. Okay.
No problem.
The bill would authorize interagency coordination for atrocities prevention and authorize funding for this purpose. And it would also authorize training for Foreign Service officers in atrocities prevention and authorize the intelligence community to focus on atrocities prevention, which is a very important to our organization, the Peace Alliance. We please ask the senator to contact Senator Cardenas or Rubio's office. Senator Harris happens to be a Democrat, so I'm going to ask her to contact Senator Cardin's office and to become a co-sponsor of this important legislation. And if at all possible, to all go ahead and champion it and contact Senator Feinstein to ask her to do the same. Thank you.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'll be happy to pass that along to Senator Harris. I appreciate you calling. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Dan. Sorry I messed up.
No, you did great. You did great. Thank you. I want to underline that you can just call and give them a bill number and say I'm in favor, but there are a few reasons why it's a good idea to actually lay out some of the details. One is to let them know that this is actually important to you and that these are the reasons it's important to you. Another is to educate that staff member. Staff members on the Hill will start to learn more what's important to the constituents, and they talk with each other, and they share what's buzzing. So you're actually changing the culture of Congress by sharing with them some of your priorities. Anything that you notice, Geraldine, that you would like, that you want to make sure to do it again the same way next time, or that you would do differently next time?
Well, if I need to just do the shorter version, I want to make sure that they're going, you know, to ask them to support the bill, because They count the calls like in support or opposed. They will count those calls at the office, and it's important, you know, to the legislature to have that kind of ammunition. So the more calls that we can get on this for people to support it, because we know it's not going to be probably popular with this current administration there to want to put funding towards this, and it's really important that we do get the funding to help with this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. For folks that want to read, I'm going to go ahead and mute you again, Geraldine. Thanks for joining in. For folks that want to read either the summary or the full text of the bill, or Senator Cardin's introductory remarks, you'll get more of the flavor of what's going on there. And you can get all that on congress.gov. But a couple of the things that it does is there's this Atrocities Prevention Board, an interagency cooperation around peace building that's already been happening for a few years, but this bill would establish it as an official entity in government, so it would be harder to take away. And it's already doing good work. It's just a matter of solidifying it, so it's not reinventing something. And it's the same thing with the Complex Crises Fund. Many of you may be familiar with the Complex Crises Fund. The Peace Alliance has been supporting it for 3 or 4 years now, I believe. The Complex Crises Fund exists in helping USAID and the State Department to promote peace-building operations. It exists, but it's not authorized. This is a subtle difference. Congress created it, but they didn't authorize it by a separate act. So without that authorization, it's easy to remove. It could just be blocked out basically with a simple budget change. So if we get Congress to authorize it through this bill, then it's harder to take away. So we're trying to solidify some of the gains that we've already made in peace building and also increase some of those budgets. So it's really a powerful opportunity. This was just introduced last month, and your phone calls could go a long way to let people know that there's a constituency that cares about this. We have about 11 minutes left. Nine minutes left. So I want to devote that time, if possible, to shares from the field. So I'm going to I put up down all the hands now because I don't know what hands were raised for other topics. So if you thought you had your hand raised, right now you don't. But anybody who wants to share what's happening, either if you were at the conference this weekend in Oakland on community and restorative justice and want to share about that, you're welcome to. If there's something going on in your neighborhood, in your school district, that some particular bill that you're campaigning for, in your kid's school, something that's happening in your life or in your plans or goals around peace building, this is your chance to share with each other. So I see one hand's raised, so you've got a short line if you are still interested in raising your hand, and I'll call on the first hand that went up, and that's Deborah Potts. Welcome, Deborah. Go ahead. Your mic is open.
Hi, yes. Rather than say that, I just wanted to comment on the last one, just real quick. Most congressional staffers don't like the use of the phone. They prefer email. I usually don't go into detail, and I usually don't ask for the legislative director. If you do ask for the legislative director, you're going to have to either email them or you're going to have to leave a voicemail. You might not get an answer. If you're going to go into detail, it's probably best to do email. If you're just making a phone call, it's probably best not to go into detail and just leave it with the person who answers the phone. Thanks.
Thanks, Deborah. I guess there are lots of schools of thought about, you know, what's more effective, and you can sort of make your own judgment. We're recommending phone calls this month. If you would feel happier sending emails or sending postcards, that's your prerogative. You can go into your congressperson's office and talk with the person that you find there. Make an appointment or just stop in and tell them what's on your mind. Lots of different ways to go. Gerilyn, you've got your hand up, and there are no other hands after Gerilyn. So again, if you have something to share or a question to ask, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. Gerilyn, your mic's open again. Did you mean to raise your hand, or was that an accident? You may be muted on your end. Can't hear you, Gerilyn.
Sorry about that. Sorry. Can you hear me now? Sorry.
Now I hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
Deborah's right in response. If you're just going to get a voicemail, just to leave a very brief message in terms of making sure that you leave the bill number and the title and what you're asking them to do. However, if you want to email the person that is handling, you will need to ask the person that answers the phone who is the person in charge of handling this bill to get their name and email, and then you can email that person, but it most likely is going to take a phone call to ascertain that information. But the reason I raised my hand was that the NACRJ, I don't know whether I wasn't on right at the beginning, so I don't know if you explained what the acronym stands for. It's the National Association of Community and Restorative Justice, had one fantastic conference this weekend in Oakland, California. Oakland, I find out, is actually on Indian land, and they had several speakers from different tribes. They had entertainment, the indigenous dances with costumes and spoken word, and it was just fabulous. I don't know how else to explain it, but it was overbooked actually, and so all of the breakout sessions were totally jammed up and whatever. So there was just I think 13 people, 13,000, I mean 1,300 actually showed up, which doubled from last year. So Dan was there, several of Judy Kimball, Nancy Merritt, all the folks involved with the Department of Peace. So we had our table there speaking with folks. And I don't know what else we can add, the ones of you that are familiar with restorative justice know that when you do a circle, you have something in the center of it that's displaying things that are meaningful, you know, like maybe a flower or a plant or, you know, like different little objects that can be spiritually or whatever for the circle that you're doing. So they had in the center of the convention room this big square one that had like a waterfall, and it had like a plant. It was just absolutely amazing. And all I can say that it was very, very intense, and I think everyone that attended it just really enjoyed it. The next one will be in Denver, Colorado in 2 years, in 2019. So I'm looking forward to that also. And I would imagine, Dan, you have some things to add in terms of what you're doing with RJ.
I'm sure. Yeah, I could touch on it. Thanks, Geraldine. I attended sessions on bringing restorative justice into school districts and working with police departments and police officers in restorative context, and also on the ritual aspects of restorative circles, among others. So there was a lot to learn. There's definitely plenty of food for thought and connection. And I'm living in Florida now, so I connected with a lot of folks who are in Florida who I didn't know, who are doing restorative practices in different areas. So I'm excited to pursue those connections for greater solidarity. So it was really rich, lots of food for thought. Yeah, I would recommend the NACRJ website to anyone who wants to learn more about what that was. I have a few more hands up, so I want to see if I can get to them. One is Mindy Reiser. Go ahead, Mindy. Wait, hold on a sec. There you go.
Yeah,
Mindy,
hi. Okay, I was just curious about, I'm Vice President of Global Peace Services USA. We do a lot of interesting things. But my question was about the atrocity prevention work. Is the thought there that, for example, the Foreign Service Institute would institute training as part of the orientation of new Foreign Service officers? I guess what I am not clear about is the link between what the Foreign Service officers are trained to do and how they're working out in the field, in that would they then be giving training to NGOs in their country of assignment, or would they at least know something about the field so they could rally academics to work with them? Can somebody enlighten me as to the chain here that would be following through when you train a Foreign Service officer?
I can do my best. I'll give you the 30-second version as I understand it. Sure. Thanks for your question. So that's part of the bill. Part of this atrocities prevention bill is training for all Foreign Service officers in atrocities prevention and recognition. So as I understand it, it's partly a matter of understanding the likely precursors to a violent crisis. So anyone who's going to be working in Foreign Service for the U.S. Will basically have their eyes open for when something may be likely to erupt into violent conflict on a smaller or larger scale, and then they'll have the basic training in how they might respond within their department, and that could be, you know, information channels, who do they connect with who has the intercultural mediation experience for that area. They'll have sort of channels of, you know, steps, action steps, and chains of communication to try to prevent that violent outbreak from happening. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the Atrocities Prevention Board, with this interagency cooperation that would be more deeply established through this bill. That's my inch deep understanding.
Yeah, and if I could, Global Peace Services years ago, going back to the year 2000, was working with Dennis Kucinich. Some of you may remember him. From Ohio, on the Department of Peace. He was one of the real proponents. Is he at all involved in the Department of Peace advocacy work?
I'm going to actually turn that over. I see Kendra Mon has her hand up, and I'm going to take the liberty of going a minute or two over to see if Kendra wants to comment on that. I don't know that he's we need to have a hand in it, but maybe Kendra knows more than I do. And as I said, we're a minute over now, so I will try to end the call within about a minute or two. So I'm gonna go ahead and remute you, Mindy, and then hear from Kendra, and
thank
then we'll go ahead and close. Sure. Kendra, you had your hand up, and I wonder if you might want to speak to that question at all.
Yes. Dennis is not involved directly, but at least once a year we contact him, and he comes on a call with us and gives us some advice on how to proceed. So he's definitely still supporting it, but he's not directly involved.
Okay. Thank you. And was there anything else you wanted to chime in with before we say goodnight?
I just want to quickly encourage people to look at Petaluma, California's Meta Center, metacenter.org, which has lots of nonviolence training, and coming up soon, they're having a training on changing the story, which is what we're wanting to do with every issue that we deal with the Peace Alliance. So metacenter.org.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kendra. Before we close, I want to take a quick poll. I would love to know how many people are willing to take that action, either to call or email if you prefer, but to contact one or both of your senators within the next week to promote this new bipartisan conflict prevention bill. Just go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you're willing to take this action within the next week. I would love to see a little just statement of willingness that you'd go ahead and do that. Oh, it warms my heart to see the ones lighting up the screen. Right now, 64% of folks on the call are willing to go ahead and do that. So I really appreciate it. And I assume the other 36% are just having a hard time finding the one key on their keypad, and they might get around to it eventually. So I'm going to unmute everybody after I share this closing quote. And I don't know whom to attribute it to, but the quote is, "We are the ones that we've been waiting for." And I really appreciate being with you all. I'm now going to unmute you, and so we can say goodnight, thank you, whatever you want to say, and I wish you all a wonderful evening and a wonderful month until we speak again.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, everyone.
Good night. Ache, Benny. Take it easy.
Shalom, salam, Dan.